This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Cunningham, class of 92, and I'm here with Andy Noel, Director of Athletics for Cornell University. Thank you all for joining us today for our hour-long conversation with Andy. Just a couple housekeeping things. This is an hour long, and we will stop promptly at 1 o'clock. To ask a question during the conference, there is a little icon on the bottom left of your screen that it looks like a little blue person with their hand up. Just click that, and you will get into the queue to ask a question by phone. You are all muted right now, and you will only be unmuted when I call on you to ask your question. So Andy's going to give us a 5 to 10 minute update about what's going on in athletics here at Cornell, and then the rest of the time is yours to ask away. Andy.
All righty then. Thank you. Actually, my opening will probably be closer to 5 minutes. I have not so much to say up front, but I'm really looking forward to the questions that you pose for me. But out of the shoot, I'd like to first state that I had a chance to look over the individuals who will be on this webinar today, and I was very thrilled to see so many really good friends, some of my former wrestlers that I recruited and worked with over the years, and lots of former athletes who I consider very good friends. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun for me. And I just wanted to say to everyone on the call that as I get questions each day now about the recent success of a number of our teams and the fact that we won three NCAA second places within the last 11 months in the Sweet 16, how did that all happen? And the bottom line, and I want to say this to you directly, is this only happened because we have terrific support from alumni and friends who every year step up and help us in ways that really make the difference between being solid and pretty competitive to being very competitive. And I appreciate that so much. And I send sincere thanks from our coaching staff and from our 1,200 athletes who benefit from your generosity. And so I'm ready for folks to fire questions. And I know, Harry Pacheski, you're waiting to ask a question out there, so maybe you should start, but I'm not sure, so go ahead.
All right. Oh. All right, again, to ask a question, go to the icon on the bottom left corner of your screen and raise your hand. Okay, we have a question from, we had one from Tony Cashin.
Hi, Andy.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Good, sir. Andy, as you think forward, I know there's lots and lots of different questions, but tell us if you can, number one, what kind of added pressure you see from a budgetary point of view, and what constraints is that going to place on you and the coaches, and what do we do about that?
Okay, well, I don't want to forget the answer. And that what we do about it is we work really hard to broaden our donor base so that we can bridge the gap so that we can still offer a high-quality program and a program that provides a positive experience for our athletes. But what I'm anticipating, quite frankly, Tony, is a fairly significant cut, not nearly as bad as I worried about 6 and 8 months ago, and that's thanks to a lot of senior administrators' very, very hard work at poring over, all the different areas in which we can save across the board at a university level. Last year, we reduced our expenses by $1.5 million. We lost 14 jobs, and of course, that was pretty tough to go through layoffs, but we feel that moving forward, the reductions anticipated will be less than that. And that's really a major plus because we worried that it would be much more than that. So I appreciate the work of Kent Fox and the senior staff to diligently look at every area and make sure that each unit didn't suffer too much in cuts that are going to happen across the board at the university.
Thank
Great.
You. Thank
Next
you.
Question is from Richard Gerken.
Hey, Dick.
Can you hear me?
Richard, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I just didn't hear the thing come on. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Dick. How are you?
I'm great. I have a two-part question. Obviously, I'm going to center. First of all, congratulations on the spectacular showing, the basketball and hockey, women and men, and other sports, track and so forth. Naturally, I'll get to my sport, football, and ask you a twofold question. The first is, I won't be able to attend the Boston meeting coming up in a couple of days. I'll be out of town. But your perspective on the new coaching staff's transition, how many recruits stayed with us in this transitionary process, and how things are going in that regard. And then secondly, just an update on admissions for our athletes, maybe in a general cast category.
Yeah, I couldn't hear the second part.
Okay. The second question was with regard to the ability, the admissions standards and so forth, with regard to the admissibility of our athletes. Following up on a previous conversation that we had that you said was very complex, but you might be able to add a little more to it at this point.
Okay.
With regard to those student-athletes that are qualified and what they have to go through to get in.
Okay? All right, so the two questions are the transition of our current coaching staff and then sort of an admission scenario. So to answer the first part, Dick, I'm actually absolutely thrilled with the transition of our football coaching staff. Kent Austin came to us, as you know, after 2 years as offensive coordinator at Ole Miss, having just prior to that been voted the outstanding professional football coach in all of Canada. And Kent assembled a terrific, terrific staff. But even before the staff was hired and moved to Ithaca, Kent had an initial meeting with our team. And I was out of town at the time, but I've heard many accounts of what happened. And the bottom line, what happened was, when Kent addressed the team for the first time in the top floor of Sholkoff, when he walked out in front of 100 athletes, they exploded to their feet in applause and cheered him. As he tried to calm them down and say, okay, that's enough, guys, thank you very much for such a warm welcome, they applauded even more, and they wouldn't let up. And they gave him the most respectful warm welcome a new head coach could ever have. And a lot of them had the privilege of being at the press conference, so they learned a little bit about his philosophies and saw his manner and saw his leadership right in that press conference. And there's just huge respect. And they're in spring practice right now, and things are going extremely well. I have athletes speaking to me on the street when I bump into them saying, it couldn't be going better. It's terrific. We love these guys. They're great coaches. They're great leaders. They work us hard, but they love us too, and there's a lot of support. So I'm thrilled with the transition, and couldn't be happier. Relative to the admission situation, I think over the last many years we've made strides through our early credential review process and terrific help from a number of the colleges who, as long as we bring candidates forward who are able to do the work to compete in the classroom with their peers, we're really getting significant help. And, you know, some colleges, quite bluntly and honestly, are positioned to help more than others, perhaps. But we really feel that the admission situation is significantly better, and we're really pleased for that. And I will just say our two largest colleges, the College of Arts and Sciences and the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, they could not be nicer, they could not be better to work with, and we really appreciate their terrific support of our program.
Great. Now we've got a question from the chat room, Harry Pacheski.
Hey, Harry.
You called it. Harry says, I'm on a phone extension, so I can't call live, but I congratulate you on what I believe must be Cornell's best overall performance ever. We've lost at least one coach, and others must be in demand. You've assembled the staff of coaches and have had well-deserved recognition. My question is whether any of the, quote, big guys are after you and what your response has been to any of the overtures.
Wow, Harry. I guess things don't change too much. You always throw a fastball or a slider at us. To be honest, I guess that's pretty important to always be honest. In the last year, I've had two schools call and want to talk about possibility of moving elsewhere, and you know, that's flattering, and it's very, very nice. I'm pretty much a Cornellian at this point. Even though I graduated from Franklin and Marshall, I've been here since 1974, except for 6 years in business, so I sort of feel like I've almost earned a degree. I'm sure not quite, but, you know, I'm certainly flattered by those kinds of things, but, you know, I'm not positioned to jump anytime soon. And I must say, I feel a lot of loyalty to coaches I've hired, and having just hired a football coach who I think the world of, and about to hire a basketball coach probably this week, everyone, I don't think it's appropriate, and it's certainly not the best circumstances to take another opportunity somewhere else with folks that in large part, quite honestly, are depending on me to support them and to help them in their transition so that they can be successful. So I won't say it's impossible, but I think it's unlikely.
Next question is from Tom Folks. Tom. Tom, are you there? Okay, Tom. I think we've got you unmuted.
How do I do that?
Oh, there you are.
There he is.
Okay. Hi, Andy. Andy, we're also
Hi, Tom.
Proud of
how are you?
Good. Proud of the coaches and the athletes and the great job they're doing these days. But I also want to compliment you. You're the leader of the big team, and you've just done a great job of getting athletics in a really sweet spot these days. And my question, Andy, is a year or two ago, I read an editorial by you talking about the Ivy League and the advantage that I remember Harvard, Yale, Princeton with their big endowments have in terms of offering scholarships broadly to all students. And they've got the money to do much more of that than we do. And your feelings about how that put Cornell and perhaps other schools, maybe Brown or Dartmouth, I don't know, others, in a little competitive disadvantage. Well, has anything happened in that? You'll, of course, remember that editorial because you wrote it.
Yes, I do.
Anything happened on that score since then, or what's your view these days?
Yes, Tom, so first of all, thank you for your very kind comments. I really appreciate your statement very much. And relative to financial aid, there has been a pretty large gap between the financial aid packages offered by Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, and those schools that immediately matched them, namely Penn and Columbia. And now Dartmouth, as of last May, agreed to remove all the differential in financial aid within Ivy League candidates. And we are doing something about it, and I'm very pleased to have David Skorton, our president, who really cares about it, sort of upfront on this one, center stage, you know, working with Susan Murphy and David Harris and Doris Davis and lots of other senior staff. We've convened a trustee task force on financial aid for athletics. They're working very diligently. Our trustee leader is Rich Booth, who is doing a terrific job, and Susan Murphy is our senior staff member that works with Rich to make sure that we develop a policy that allows us to be competitive in our own conference within the Ivy League. And it has been very difficult, quite frankly. We have had to battle through some tough times with it, but the bottom line is we believe within the next 2 weeks to a month or so that we will be able to ask our trustees for a blessing for a policy that allows us to be on a competitive playing field with the rest of the Ivy League.
Whoa, that's good news. Thank you.
It's very good news. If I wasn't able to say that, Tom, the coaching staff that is so terrific that we have right now would not be with us within the next 2 years.
Yeah, right on. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks Wonderful. A lot, Tom.
You bet.
Up next, Dick Vincent on the phone. Dick, you're on.
Andy, can you hear me?
Yes, Dick. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Hey, I'll add my congratulations. You've had a great year, especially with wrestling and basketball. But there was an announcement today concerning a little difference between the NCAA and the Sports Council concerning the use of surveys for Title IX.
Right.
I don't know if you're up to date on that, but clearly the Sports Council and the NCAA are not in agreement. You're on the committee. Is this reduction in the use of surveys to meet Title IX requirements going to have any significant or any effect on Cornell recruitment?
I don't think so at all. I mean, I think this is just a bigger Title IX gender equity issue, and it's an issue that centers around a university being able to show that they are in compliance with one of the prongs of Title IX through surveying the student body and asking them, particularly the women, are you being served appropriately, you know, within the Department of Athletics and Physical Education? So, Dick, I don't think this is going to have an impact on us at all, to be bluntly honest. And I don't think that we focus on the survey issue at Cornell. We focus on offering both our men's and women's teams equal opportunity to participate, equal recruiting budgets, equal team travel budgets. We focus on this a lot based on fairness as opposed to different ins and outs of Title IX and civil rights law. We have our own way of really focusing on it, and quite frankly, almost at every expenditure we make and as we build our budgets every year in every area, we think about fairness and gender equity.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we've got a question in the chat room from Drew McGeller. Congratulations to everyone this year. It may be too early to tell, but how has athletic success impacted school spirit, morale, or potentially overall applications due to better visibility for the school and the teams?
Hey, Drew, how you doing? It's hard to tell how it's going to impact applications because applications are so high at 36,000 or 38,000. It's not quite like it was at Boston College years ago when Doug Flutie won the Heisman and the applications really ramped up as well as the average SATs. You know, it's hard to say on that note, but I can tell you school spirit was palpable during the winter. It was absolutely incredible. And to have the sellouts in Neumann Arena for many, many basketball games, and in one given night to have a sellout in Liner Rink, a sellout in Neumann Arena, and a sellout in the Friedman Wrestling Center, it was pretty exciting. And school spirit, I think, really ramped up during this time. And, of course, our job is to keep our program strong so that our students have a lot of fun and are able to enjoy watching their peers and their mates compete across 36 varsity sports. So the quick answer is school spirit is really terrific at this moment, and I think at a high since 1974 when I arrived on campus.
Okay, phone question from James Logsdon. James, you're on.
Good morning, Andy. First of all, let me add my voice to the thunderous applause that you're receiving for just incredible winter season, well deserved. I have a question that's related to three parts. One is, I don't think you've gotten enough credit for sticking with Coach Donahue during the lean years when you first joined your organization. I'm wondering if you saw something that helped you maintain your confidence in him. Then, did he change anything to bring about the great success of the last 3 years? And finally, whatever he did do, is it transferable to other Cornell sports, say, such as football?
Wow, I don't know if my attention span allows me to deal with three of those at once. So the very first one, I'll try to remember, and maybe someone here in the studio will remind me if I forget any of the other nuances of your question. But first of all, did I see something in Steve during the early stages when we weren't successful? And the answer is absolutely yes. I think I was fortunate, having been a coach and been around a long time with coaches and athletes, to see somebody's drive, their work ethic, their will to win, how they discipline their team, the standard they set. And a quick example of that for Steve Donahue in the early going when we weren't winning many games, he would sit his best player on the bench and lose a game if that player refused to play the role that was determined for that player for that particular game. Sometimes our best shooters, our best athletes, were not getting as many minutes as they might because they weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. Steve had the courage and the discipline to say, okay, this may cost me tonight's game, but this is how we're going to be doing this for years to come. And so Steve did a really good job laying that foundation, and I noticed that. I pay attention to my coaches and my teams, and it didn't take rocket science to figure out this guy had the stuff to be a championship coach, no doubt. So that's the first part of your question. I remember the last part, which has to do with it being transferable, but what was the middle part? Did he change anything? Well, yes. Jim, let me just say the biggest change in Steve over 10 years was when Kalik Gant suffered the accident at practice where we feared that he would be paralyzed from the neck down the rest of his life. And miraculously, he's about 99% now, so we're thrilled with that. But certainly that had a major impact on Steve. It provided perspective for him that I think was very, very valuable, that these athletes, these, you know, somebody's sons, and in other cases someone's daughters, they're very precious, and their full experience, their academic experience plus their success athletically, all is very, very important. And I think it added just a level of perspective that made him that much more effective. And I also think an added element of fun was introduced into the program. And is it transferable? I think the concepts and the sense of family and esprit de corps is transferable. I met with a number of the team members last night at 5:30 as part of our search situation, and I can tell you they feel like a team. And Eric Peck, one of our outstanding freshmen, actually said in the Ithaca Journal the other day, "We'll be fine. And we're going to be together, and we're going to compete for another Ivy championship next year." And so the team is so close, so on the same page, and so supportive of each other that it's transferable, but I think a coach that we hire has to have it coming in. I mean, I don't expect him to develop it once he's at Cornell. He better have it coming in, or we won't hire him.
Okay, next question from the phone, Jay Carter.
Hi, Andy.
AJ, I expect a softball here, buddy.
Oh, this is going to be so soft, you're not going to believe
okay.
it.
Okay. All right, I like it.
First of all, thank you for doing this, using this technology today. I'm really quite impressed, and I think this is going to be a good vehicle for us to further engage on a team-by-team basis our alumni. So I'm really excited that you're doing this. And
well, Jay, thank you. And of course, I enjoy the reputation of being sort of on the cutting edge in technology. And so you could see how this is a pretty normal happenstance for me. But I do really appreciate your comment. And yes, I know, Jay, one of the things I appreciate about you so much is that you don't just think about your particular sport, sprint football. You try to figure out how what's been successful for your program vis-a-vis alumni outreach and support, and how it can be transferred to all the other teams on campus. So you've been a great ambassador for us.
Thank you, and that actually leads me to my second and last point. As you and many people on the call know how strongly and how passionate I am for sprint football, but this year I invite everybody on the call to join me in writing a check to the Cornell Annual Fund for Athletics to give you as much flexibility as possible and to help address some of these financial concerns that Tony Cashin led off the call with today. So just wanted to invite everyone to join me. Thank you.
Jay, you're really kind. And that wasn't just a softball. That was like an underhand pitch. So thanks a lot, Jay, and thanks for your continued support.
Great. Next question is from the chat room from Craig Holm. Congratulations. Andy, what's the status of the long-range campus plan, which has a major impact on athletics?
Okay, well, Craig, the answer to that is and perhaps it's a bit unfortunate in one way, but fortunate in another way. And I think initially it looked like that much of the campus plan that would impact athletics would be out about 10 years. And right now, because of the amount of debt that the university assumed over time and our real focus university-wide to reduce our debt service, et cetera, I don't think some of the projects that were on the docket for the near term will be on such a near term now. So I think they'll be further out. And so the impact on athletics and physical education in the next 10 to 15 years, I do not think will be severe and in fact, may not have a major impact at all. Now, certainly, you know, we'd love it if the economy bounced back beautifully and all of a sudden we had the funding and the wherewithal to initiate some of these terrific projects that are on the docket university-wide. But right now, Craig, I don't think the changes are forthcoming in the near term. And that's mainly due to the economic condition of not just universities, but the economy, the U.S. economy and world economy writ large.
Next question is from James Van Buren.
Hi, Andy. This is Jim in Atlanta.
This is Jim Sr., not Jimmy Van B.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you in June when I'm back up there for the 55th reunion of the great class of 55. But my questions, a lot of which have been answered, were primarily dealing with the ability of our athletic department to maintain competitiveness with our Ivy colleagues there, especially the big ones in turn. And you had a very good discussion about that. How does that sort of thing filter down to some of the other sports, which I know football has just not been able to do it, it seems like, the last few years. But certainly lacrosse and basketball and wrestling all have done well, especially in the Ivies. Is this competitive edge still a concern?
Yeah. Jim, sure, the competitive edge is a major concern. And quite frankly, it's the thing I worry about, and it's my top priority by far. Because I know that a lot of the fundraising and a lot of the support and the excitement on campus and appreciation for athletics ramps up when our alumni and friends can see success and they can see happy athletes and happy students. To see the crowd at the basketball game storm the court, makes me understand that it's not about the 15 and 20 players on the court. It's about the 2,000 to 3,000 students that are having the time of their life supporting their program and being proud to be Cornellians. And so this whole circumstance that you allude to is very, very important. I am most optimistic that we will have a policy moving forward that hopefully the Board of Trustees, after they receive information and recommendations from the Trustee Task Force on Financial Aid, that the trustees embrace those recommendations and that in the near term, within the next couple weeks to a month, that we'll have a policy that allows us to be competitive within our own conference, within the Ivy League. And I believe that Harvard, Yale, and Princeton's stance that they've taken is so aggressive that if we can become competitive with them, we also become competitive with Northwestern, Vanderbilt, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, and other schools that offer scholarships. And it's not that we can match a scholarship, because we never can. And it's not that we can have an appeal against a scholarship. We are only ever going to give financial aid based on need. But where there is need, the package can be built aggressively enough that it's attractive. In other words, reduced parental contributions. We already have a terrific program where families whose adjusted gross income is $75,000 or less, the student has no loan, and so that's a terrific plus as well. So we're getting there, Jim. It's not fully hammered out, but you can trust Rich Booth and his trustee committee and Susan Murphy and the senior staff to make this happen, and they deserve a lot of credit for the hours of work that they've put forth.
Thank you.
Next question is from Alice Burgless.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Andy. Bear with my sinus infection and cold, so I'll try to get through
okay,
without
anything.
Okay. First of all, thrills at the Cornell Club for the two games, thrills at Syracuse. But maybe most of all or differently, the thrill of sitting in the what I thought was wonderfully important reception you gave and hosted with David Scorton for all the athletes from the sport, the women and the men's. And that led me to a couple of things. One is I wondered what it was about Cornell's winning that galvanized the country in many ways, and I realized, Cornelian or not, it was the view of the scholar-athlete. So whether friends went to Michigan or the kids went to Duke or wherever they were, the sort of understanding of what these kids must have been balancing to make these extraordinary achievements. And I think about two things. One is getting to know them as a team better. And I'm wondering if places like Trustee Council Weekend, in conjunction with Susan Murphy and her Student and Academic Services kind of view, sitting in a room, not the athletics breakfast that you hold for the obvious athletes and past athletes, but those of us who get to come back who would maybe like to figure out not only what it means to be a Cornellian and a student, but to be a scholar-athlete. And are there ways that seeing a team together in a room offered on something like that or even homecoming would, in the end, bolster also the giving that you might get, but at the moment also the bond between an alum of all stripes, athlete or not, and the students who do so much to make us proud as academic and athletic Cornellians. So that would be, how do we take these teams that were just so visible and organic to look at and bring them one-on-one? And similarly, and just to say that I thought a couple of years ago you did an outreach in December by email that asked for support in various differential athletic programs that you were running, sport. And it was interesting to see what needs funding and what doesn't, and how much gets overfunded and how much would just do so well with another $1,000 or $1,500. And that reminds me of the old communique back of the magazine where you could see that your dollar really mattered. So the second point is financial, but the first is the emotional that leads to the financial.
Right, right. We make it, and Alice, thanks for your question. We make every effort when we have a function within athletics, and John Webster and his staff do a terrific job of catching up with our students and asking them to be involved in our meetings, whether it's our Alumni Affairs and Development meeting, our AAAC group, or Trustee Council Weekend, Homecoming Weekend, all those types of events. We always invite students to speak, and quite often our brand new coaches, but always students, and they're always the hit of the event. Now, relative to having our alumni and friends experience what it would be like to interact with an entire team, that's a lot more difficult, but certainly not impossible. And maybe what we need to have, Alice, at homecoming and reunion and major weekends, Trustee Council Weekend, Parents Weekend, perhaps we have a reception with alumni with the women's ice hockey team or with the lacrosse team or maybe with athletes who are available in general. But if you want to get that feel of what it's like to get to know the personality of a team, like our basketball team this year that was so terrific, I think perhaps a reception would be a great idea with a group of alumni and friends with particular teams, and maybe we could even do something where we have four or five teams available and folks that come back for a major event can choose what team to work with or be involved in reception with when they come back. So I like that idea an awful lot.
I'd be happy to work with you on something that brings it small. It doesn't have to be a team of 450 people. But if there were a way, particularly for the non-athletes who have alumni, who have, you know, this extraordinary embrace, and to capitalize on that now and make these students real, particularly when we've been struggling on the other side of the desperation of some of our other students, might be wonderful. And it doesn't say that other athlete students aren't struggling emotionally as well to make all this happen on their, you know, on their terms.
Right.
Right. Anyway, I throw it out. I'm happy to help.
That's a terrific question. And the other thing that you did allude to slightly with the communication that we sent out at one point, where we listed what the fundraising goals were for each team and how far away the particular team was to reaching that goal. And I would say to you that none of our individual programs are overfunded. I think what the message is that some of our sports have very, very large targets. Like football has to raise $700,000 of their own each year to make ends meet. Some other sports that don't have quite as large a clientele or maybe haven't been at varsity status as long, like some of our women's programs, maybe their targets are much less. But when somebody goes over their budget or goes over their target for fundraising, that money stays with the program and then is used for things that are really important and required in that program. It really doesn't go to things that are sort of over the top or fluff, if you will. And what pleases me the most about that effort is when particular sports meet their target and their annual fundraising, quite often folks will help other sports reach their target.
Right.
And so I think it really went a long way to bring our teams together and our alumni and friends together over a number of sports and throughout the program more broadly.
Good. Let's move on to Mike Troy. Your question.
How are you?
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Andy?
You're going well.
Good. I will. I'll make one comment and then a couple questions. But first off, obviously, just add to my congratulations this year. But really, also, I guess point out to everybody that this has been really a 7 or 8 or 9 year phenomenon. And I don't have the exact statistics, but if memory serves, I think we've won something like 56 or so Ivy League titles in the last 7 or 8 or 9 years, and in the under your leadership, and in the prior 7 or 8 or 9 years, it was something like 4 or 5 or some significantly lower number. So when I think about really the breadth of the success across the entire athletics department, that speaks to the job that you have done in particular, and not just the coaches and the team. So I know you have your hand tied behind your back in many cases, like with financial aid, et cetera. So congratulations to you, Annie, and you deserve every bit of credit alongside all those other people. So that's my comment, which leads me to just two quick questions. Number one, can you give us any update on the basketball coach search in terms of, whatever you can say, front runners or people you've spoken to, and I know we've chatted before. But and then secondly, for priorities that you have for athletics in terms of, facilities or fundraising, where would you? If you had your wish list of projects you'd like to get achieved or fundraising, what would it be?
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot. And again, thank you for your really kind comments. You've been a great friend to our department and to me and to the university in general. And I appreciate it when you say those really kind things. It means a lot. You want some inside scoop about this this basketball search, so I'll give you guys a very confidential update, okay? Because I know there's not too many people here on the line, but we have three individuals who have already interviewed on campus for 2 days. We had a couple other individuals that we interviewed over the phone, and we had first of all Matt Langle, who was an assistant at Penn and at Temple. He was a first team All Ivy player at Penn and played professionally, and so he's a young man that has 6 years of coaching experience. The second individual to come to campus was Bill Courtney, and Bill is a gentleman who started his career at American University in Bowling Green, and then with Jim Larrañaga left Bowling Green to go to George Mason. And he worked there for 8 years, and the following year, after 8 years of hard work, they got to the Final Four and did a terrific job, stunned the world. And Bill also served at Providence and the University of Virginia and is now at Virginia Tech. So he has a lot of years of experience, too. He's a terrific person and a motivator, has lots of energy, and Matt is a fantastic coach as well. A little bit less experience, of course, but really has some qualities that are very, very impressive and very important. And then finally, we had a candidate that was here the past 2 days that left yesterday afternoon at 4 o'clock, Gary Close, who's an assistant coach at Wisconsin. And Gary had spent 23 years in Division I at Stanford University, the University of Iowa, and Wisconsin. And just a little tidbit here, when I asked Gary in the phone interview preceding his campus interview, you know, how he would make the transition from Stanford, Iowa, and Wisconsin, all big-time programs, with full scholarships where they have a huge staff and lots of people running around to do every little project you can dream of. How would he make that transition? He reminded me that after Iowa, when he didn't receive a position right away, when there was transition in Iowa basketball, he accepted a job at the local high school for 3 years. He took them to the state tournament a couple years, but he rode in a yellow school bus and swept the floors for 3 years to show that he can make a transition below the big time and do well and work hard and enjoy the experience with the athletes. So he was our third candidate, and my anticipation, Mike, is that we'll make a decision quite frankly in the next 24 hours, and we hope to have a press conference soon after that.
Okay, the next question comes from the chat from Patrick Welch. Andy, Cornellians have known for a long time what others have not, that Cornell is the best university in the world. Similarly, many of us know what others may not, that we have the best athletic director in the land. The challenges to compete on a national level, especially for an Ivy League school, are immense. Can you give us a sense for how you personally define success for Cornell athletics?
Hey, thanks a lot, Pat, for the fastball there. Now, Pat Welch, for those of you who don't know Pat, he was one of my top recruits over my 14-year career at Cornell in wrestling, and he was the captain of the national championship high school team and one of the greatest athletes and wrestlers I ever had the privilege to work with, and Pat's now a vice president at Goldman Sachs. And Pat, so I define success in a number of ways. You have to define success in a number of ways, and I think athletically, I certainly want all of our athletes to have a positive experience. If we have athletes come to Cornell and work hard and not have a positive experience, that is not the plan. And so the first thing I would say, Pat, is athletes who work hard and make their investment of time and energy, they need to have a positive experience, and we need to be able to support them at a level where they are able to have a positive experience. I also, quite frankly, believe that we need to have the opportunity to compete for championships. And it's not appropriate or fair for a group of Cornell athletes to be out on the field or in the pool or on the court and be looking across the way at the opposing team that has just across the board more elite athletes because of variables like financial aid or whatever. So our athletes at Cornell should have the opportunity to compete for championships. And in recent years, we have had the ability to do that. And as we've talked about earlier in this program, we've got to make sure we shore up the financial aid so that we can continue to do that. And, icing on the cake, Pat, but something that, we've gotten accustomed to of late and we're very spoiled is that we've had a number of teams succeed in the national arena. Lacrosse last year in the spring, second in the nation, women's ice hockey, second in the nation in triple overtime, the wrestlers second in the nation to Iowa. But then add the Sweet 16 for basketball, which is incredible, and then add men and women's squash at 6th and 7th in the nation, add men and women's polo, both national semifinalists, add women's fencing, 14th in the NCAA, without the privilege of having a men's team. And in fencing, it's a combination of the men's points with the women's points, and we only have women varsity fencers, so they place 14th without points from a men's team, which is incredible. And I'm sure there, we have other teams that are nationally ranked and doing very well. So I think success beyond the Ivy League level on the national stage is very, very attractive. It might not be our expectation, in a lot of sports, but certainly in men's ice hockey, where over the years Mike Schaefer's had those guys in the top 10 and always competing for the ECAC championship. We won that again this year. So, you know, we have our sports where we're traditionally strong, but now more across the board we have competitive teams, and I think we owe it to our athletes to be able to provide an opportunity to be successful when they compete and not be at the bottom of the league.
Okay, next question is from Peter Gogolak.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Pete. How are you?
Please don't leave us. listen, I'm going to second Mike Troy's comments that congratulations to you and your programs in the last number of years. What's terrific about Cornell's programs is that we are not only successful, Andy, in the Ivy League, but also successful in a national level, and it's been fantastic. And those of us who cannot make it to the games, you can watch the teams on the television and also on the computer. And I think Princeton and Cornell playing lacrosse on May 1st. It's going to be on ESPNU.
Yep.
And so, you know, we have a national television audience, which is, you know, which is terrific. I mean, just great. However, Andy, just like to say one thing is that my Cornell friends and I, we were very disappointed seeing Steve Donahue leaving us. And I feel that our great institution like Cornell, which prides in success, and produces successful alumni all over the world, and because of that success, you know, we gave a lot of money to Cornell, millions of dollars, and when you have a coach like Steve, that I believe comes once in a generation to Cornell, and he can produce a team with student athletes, just how tough it is to bring in, and I think the SAT scores, those five young men who are around 1,300, 1,500, 1,400, and in a most visible sport, we were able to succeed. And so my question to you is, you know, when you have a successful guy and our incoming student athletes see that if they do well and they're successful and you let a coach like this go, what do you tell those student athletes to come in that in certain sports, and I'm really concerned about Jeff Tambroni, you know, he is, you know, he's my hero. You know, what he has produced is absolutely terrific.
I too.
Would he leave if he's too successful? So what do you tell these student athletes when they come in and that, yes, we're going to keep your coach and we're not going to let him go because Duke, you know, Stanford, Georgetown, great universities, you know, they're able to keep their coaches. So give me some assurances that our great coach is going to stay and be able to do it.
Yeah, Pete, I appreciate your comments very much. And relative to Jeff Tambroni, he's promised me an extended stay. So I don't think there's a worry with Jeff at this point, and it's
terrific.
Particularly because I think he's treated very, very well. Now, Pete, the one major differential that's a challenge is the marketplace in the sport of basketball. The marketplace is sort of over the top, and to have a situation where a coach is offered a multi-year contract at $1 million a year or more, that gets to be a very huge challenge, not just financially. And I know that when we've spoken about this before, you know, you've mentioned a university with our huge budget and our wherewithal, that we should be able to step up for an individual that brings so much public relations and millions of dollars of attention across the country to the university. But there's also the philosophical part of, you know, do you pay a high-profile basketball coach twice what your president makes, or three times or four times what the chairman of the physics department makes? You know, those are some very tough questions that exist at a world-class, you know, research teaching university like Cornell. I can tell you, Pete, it hurt immensely to lose Steve Donahue. And I would have loved to have had a situation where we could have been competitive. But in the sport of basketball, where the market is sort of just over the top, it's so difficult. And all the other sports, high-profile sports, you mentioned lacrosse and football and ice hockey and many others, we are very competitive in the marketplace nationally, not just within the Ivy League. So a couple years ago, our president and senior staff really did make an overture and made some adjustments so that we could keep a coach as strong as Steve Donahue for 10 years instead of for 6 or 7 years. And it unfortunately for us, Pete, it got to the point where the offers were so strong and so aggressive that we weren't able to keep up. And I also have to say this, and if you spoke to Steve Donahue, he would tell you the same thing. Part of his decision had to do with competing at the highest level, either in the ACC or the Big East. There was an attraction to him after 10 years at Penn, 10 years at Cornell, to try his hand at the very big time. And there was part pulling him, Pete, as much as he loved his players and Cornell and our alumni and his special alumni friends that he had, there was that pull in conjunction to the incredible financial package that they provided for his family. And I think the family part of it, Pete, is what made it happen, because I think Steve individually wouldn't have worried about it or cared as much, but 4 children and a wife, so a family of 6, it was important at that level.
Good. Next question is from Bob Hubsmith. Bob, are you on?
Hello, Noel. I would like to join with all the previous alumni who have asked very thoughtful questions, and I think your direct answers are appreciated. So with time fleeting, I offer my congratulations to you and the whole Cornell community on such a fine showing. My question relates to the role that alumni can or are allowed to participate in recruiting or getting student athletes in high schools interested in Cornell. I know there's some limitation on what can be done, but would you please just outline what are the actual rules that myself and other alumni would have to adhere to in this situation?
Well, thank you for the question and your kind comments. It's very clear and it's very simple. And it's changed drastically in the last 20 or 30 years. Alumni are only allowed to recommend candidates to a coaching staff for their follow-up. An alumnus is not allowed to talk to a candidate vis-a-vis the recruitment to Cornell University. They're not allowed to discuss with a candidate how great it would be to play for a particular coach. They're not allowed to talk to a candidate, ninth grade or older, at all, or his parents, about attending a university based on athletics. Now, if a person comes up to you as a Cornell alumnus and asks you a question about your experience at Cornell, your major, your college, did you enjoy it, is the weather really as tough as people say, and of course the answer is no, it's a lot better than what people say. You're allowed to discuss the university in general, but you are not allowed to be personally involved in the recruitment of that athlete at all. What we really appreciate is when our alumni across the nation identify a terrific athlete in their area or one that they're aware of in somebody else's area, call the coach right away and say, I'm aware of this candidate playing XYZ sport, and obviously you'd be calling that coach, and you recommend them. Then it's up to the coach to follow up and to determine if that particular athlete is strong enough to compete for Cornell or is in a position where we have needs. You know, sometimes we may have a number of athletes in a particular position. Like we might have three terrific goalies in ice hockey. If a goalie is recommended and they might even be outstanding, they may not be recruited by our coaching staff because they would be the fourth goalie. So the coaching staff has to make those decisions relative to the intensity of recruitment or a decision not to recruit. But as an alumnus, you can only recommend to our coaching staff, and you can only answer questions in general about the university and your experience. You can't say, hey, how about that basketball team? And I think, you know, you could be a major cog in the machinery moving forward. You can't do that.
Okay, we have time for one more question from Kenneth Campia.
Andy, congratulations. Real quickly, following up on Pete's question, were there other factors with Steve, non-financial, that related to the ability of Cornell to be competitive within the Ivy League, or, you know, whether they be admissions issues or financial issues, things that gave him, a less encouraging view of the future than what you might have liked?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I would say that I believe number one was the combination of an opportunity to compete at the ACC level and the incredible financial package. But then, Ken, it would be dishonest for me to say that some of the frustrations that existed the last couple of years vis-a-vis financial aid, I do think that took a bit of a toll on Steve, and it's taken a toll on some other coaches. Steve will never mention that. He will never complain. Jeff Tambroni will never complain. Mike Schaefer, they're not about complaining outside the family. But there is no question that Steve Donahue struggled the last couple of years with a number of recruits who wanted to come to Cornell that had financial aid packages that didn't stack up to the other Ivy packages. And so that is being addressed, quite honestly. I'm not spinning this to be more positive than it is. There's a task force led by Rich Booth and Susan Murphy that is addressing this issue. And I believe in the next 2 weeks to a month, we will have a policy that allows us to compete evenly within the league. And if we do, Katie, bar the door, because we're going to do a lot of winning because we have the best coaching staff by far in the Ivy League. And many people have told me that have been around a long time that, in their view, it's the greatest group of coaches as far as their ability to lead than we've had in many decades. So we need to keep those coaches. And thank you, Ken, for your question.
All right. Well, that is a fantastic way to wrap up our hour. Thank you, Andy, and thank you, everybody on the phone. We'll be sending out a survey shortly. I would love to get your feedback on this. This is the first faculty conversation we've had online, and I just want to thank you, Andy, for your technical prowess and agreeing to do this.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks very much.